The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix Podcast. Tune in today.
The Fold is brought to you by oOh!media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. No mai hoki mai ki a The Fold, e mihi nei, ko Duncan Grieve tōku ingoa. My guests today are Alex Radford and Richard Thompson, co-founders of an independent media agency called D3, both of them with long careers in media and a lot of experience in digital media, and particularly the sort of the digitizing of legacy media, which I think gives them a very specific and super valuable insight on where we are right now. You know, we're recording this sort of around March 20. We're about a month on from those two huge explosions in out of News Hub and then TVNZ. And that is just, it's so in the air. You do not have a conversation with anyone in any aspect of this business where that isn't the whole of the backdrop. And you know, it obviously for listeners of this podcast, and I think increasingly for anyone who even consumes media here, you start to think about the financial wiring of this business in a way that you typically wouldn't have. And media agencies are so crucial in all this because they direct advertising spend. And advertising spend is what funds the vast majority of media in this country. You know, most people don't pay a cent for any news media or for any local media. You know, they might have a Netflix sub, they might have a Spotify sub, but in terms of local media, they're getting the free stuff. And when you're getting the free stuff, you are the product. And that's true on YouTube, that's true on TikTok, that's true on Facebook and all of Meta's products. The whole of the battle is when people are paying to access you, who are they paying? And, you know, the general theory is it's hard to know because, you know, these finances are often opaque and private, but that 90 cents in the dollar goes to offshore digital platforms and just 10 cents stays locally. And that's, you know, as sort of humbled as the local media feels at the moment, you know, if you continue the triage from legacy media to digital media with that 90 cents going offshore ratio, man, it's going to be a lot smaller. So, you know, this is the backdrop. And I really, really enjoy this conversation. The deeper into it we get, the more candor and insight. And honestly, I'm very grateful to Richard and Alex for being as candid as they are about how the Google ad stack works and why it is that local publishers, because we aren't blameless in this, honestly, struggle to kind of get on big advertising spend schedules that might come out of Australia. So, and again, maybe this sounds a bit esoteric to you, but honestly, it is the whole of the reason for why we are at where we are right now. And, you know, I think that where the conversation ends is in somewhat of a hopeful place, but it requires a bit of an attitudinal change from a lot of different people involved in the local media ecosystem. So listen out for that. I should say, and weird that I haven't mentioned it on the podcast, but, you know, I am unfortunately a New Zealander. But this is basically a repeat of a conversation I had in person in Austin. Alex and Richard were up there attending South by Southwest. So was I with my daughter, Jet. And the reason that I was up there was because The Fold was nominated for Best International Podcast in the iHeart Media Podcast Awards. Has been reported a bit, but I don't know why I didn't mention that. I just thought it was a bit weird. I didn't win. It's fine. Some Australian podcast won. But it was crazy to be in the room. There's like 300-400 people and just lots of very famous podcasters like Sir Scott Galloway and you know, Jay Shetty, like all these like just kind of megawatt talents. Kyle McLaughlin was there for some reason. It was cool. And I don't know how The Fold got nominated. I'm very grateful. I can't imagine anything like it will happen again. But it was good to go up there. And I'm writing a piece, which will have been published by the time this airs, that is just sort of reflecting on what you see when you see the sort of world of technology and culture and media colliding, and thinking about where we're at right now as a country and an industry and so on. But anyway, yeah, it happened, and these guys told me I had to acknowledge it on the podcast. So here I am doing that. Anyway, it's a good chat. I really enjoyed it. I think that what D3 do and what Alex and Richard represent in terms of a local independent agency that has a different approach to the big holding companies is quite interesting and important as a perspective. And so, yeah, hopefully you enjoy it. This is Alex Radford and Richard Thompson from D3 on The Fold. Tēnā kōrua, welcome to The Fold.
Hi, what nice to be here.
Thank you.
So I wonder if you could start by telling our listeners who you are and sort of how you got here and however long you want to take to explain it.
So yeah, we're the co-founders of a business called D3, it's the easiest put as a media agency here in New Zealand, an independent media agency. We were founded about 6 years ago, just in the belief that there's a better way of operating in our world on behalf of New Zealand-based businesses. We saw a lot of global models being applied to what is a relatively unique market down here in New Zealand, and we just thought there's a better way for clients to get two things, really: the clarity of the opportunity in a changing world of from what is traditional media into a digital media, but also then confidence in their agency partners to deliver solutions that are fit for purpose and that they can trust will deliver business outcomes.
Hi Duncan. I'm Alex. Alex Radford. I'm the other co-founder of D3. I also hold the position of chairperson of the Independent Media Agency of New Zealand, which is something that we set up last year to help give independent agencies across New Zealand a bigger voice in the market.
I wonder if you could start by just explaining what a media agency does, because we've got quite a broad listenership within media, and it's, you know, something that I probably only figured out, you know, too late into my career. And I think it's a lot of the public isn't aware of that special position that they hold, especially as the industry goes so much more digital and complex.
To keep it really simple, a media agency will transact media. So it can be anything from TV, billboards, through to Google advertising and Facebook advertising on behalf of their clients. So what that means really is a client will come to us and ask us to help them solve their business problem, whether it's growth, whether it's efficiency, sales, or lead generation. And we find the right channels, the right balance of budgets, and the right audiences for them to target, and then consistently work to improve that to ultimately drive their business outcomes. So whilst the creative agencies, I guess, create the ads that you see, we will place those in any channel from traditional to digital media.
And Alex, you chair iMans, and which was founded less than a year ago. And obviously on some level, if you've found an association, there has to be a reason for it. And it, so maybe sort of explain what that is and certainly why it was necessary, in the sense that there are a whole bunch of different bodies representing different aspects of the communications industry, and yet the independent media agencies clearly have a, you know, that's the clue is in the fact that you founded it, sense a differentiation between the large sort of holding companies which dominate a lot of how media is placed in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think further to what Richard said, the history of media agencies that back in the 70s, 80s, you used to just have an advertising agency, and then the creative teams would come up with the idea, build the ads, and then they'd pass it off to the media department to then, you know, put it on TV or put it into the newspaper, and then largely just go for lunch. unfortunately, that world's now changed, and because audiences are fragmented, that the internet now exists, where you know we are now infinitely fragmented into all different types of websites and apps, etc. The complexity that sits within buying media is also is really a response to that complexity of where audiences are. And when media agencies were created, basically back in the 80s and early 90s, big holding companies then started to buy up all of the independents and create these big networks. So you'd have, you know, if you're an agency for, say, Kellogg's or Toyota, you need to have somebody all over the world that has a holistic view of everything. So you'll have an agency which will do the work in Japan, in the UK, in Australia, and then New Zealand. So what happened now is there's basically five big umbrella organizations that control probably 50, 60% of all the media spend across the world. And that's great when you're a Toyota or a Subaru or a Kellogg's or a GlaxoSmithKline. But when you're a small business or a medium-sized business in a small place like New Zealand, independent agencies which aren't affiliated with any of the networks, don't have any big deals with any of the big media companies, we can offer a more independent, more agnostic view of where you should be placing your advertising. And that's really why we started up IMANS. There's lots of choice within New Zealand and with the media agencies, but most of the work goes to the big holcos because it's kind of like a default choice. So we're giving the opportunity to tell the government and marketers that actually there are some really good quality independent agencies out there that can do as good or if not better job than the big holding companies.
Because it's interesting, right? Because the holding companies thing and the fact of them being globally networked, it's not particularly widely known, and you understand why it might seem quite esoteric to the public, but it has quite a profound impact on how the money flows and therefore what media is and isn't made, essentially. And you do hear stories about sort of deals that are made internationally that mean that particular providers are favoured and that there might not be a lot of visibility for the client around, you know, that sort of stack. And suddenly, you know, for us as a local independent ourselves, albeit in a different part of the sort of the ecosystem, it can feel like these things happen a long way away from us and it's very hard to get on the agenda. You know, do you think that there is something in that idea that there is an alliance between the independents and the in a local environment that is kind of more, I guess that can avoid some of the, you know, just the tectonic plates, the vast scale that can just miss a lot of actually what makes the media environment in New Zealand unique?
Yeah, I mean, for full transparency, both Richard and I used to work for the big holcos, and certainly, if you're a Kellogg's or Spark or The Warehouse, you know, big brands with lots of spend and lots of media managers and things like that, then, you know, one of the holding company agencies is perfect. But if you do really rely on your media, rely on the outcomes, that you're really close to the coalface, so to speak, then working with an independent agency does have its significant benefits. And I think largely, our job as a media agency is to find audiences for our clients to put advertising in front of them. There is no doubt that, you know, audiences have been moving to, you know, the likes of Meta and Google, YouTube, TikTok, etc. But I think there's still, and I think everybody within really the independent media agency world believes that, you know, that having a strong local media is very important.
That's interesting, right? Because like that is that's something that you know you've said as chair of IMANS, and certainly when you speak to people, especially strategists and so on, who sort of you know at the big holding companies, that they're at pains to say they don't, you know, if the local media were to completely fall away, and we'll talk about the kind of current environment because that doesn't seem like particularly fanciful anymore, and then you've only got these sort of giant, you know, UGC platforms and so on, the actual case for the existence of media agencies changes and potentially gets pretty thin if you view it from certain angles. And yet we don't see a lot of it, you know, as you know, I talk to a lot of other local publishers, and very frequently you don't feel like those sentiments actually become action on in terms of schedules. You know, why do you think that you know, is that fair to say? And why do you think that happens? That there is this kind of amazing gravity exerted by the sort of giant distribution platforms that you know is part of why we're seeing what we're seeing at News Hub, at TVNZ, and so on.
It could be it can be put down to one very simple thing, that it needs to be whatever we do as an independent or a global needs to be fit for purpose. What you do see is astounding performance out of some of the global platforms in terms of achieving objectives for clients. So they're successful for a reason. So there is a genuine competitor there for local media.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think what's really important is that decision is made by the agency and by the advertiser on the merits that are in front of them. And that's whilst considering the local media landscape as well as the global media landscape. And one of the great strengths of that we see that IMANS is bringing to the market and that independent agencies are bringing to the market is the ability to buy tools, technology, and recommendations for clients that are right for this market, are right for New Zealand, and are grounded in the local market environment. So you do need to really understand the local landscape and the opportunities that you know sites like the Spinoff offer to be able to then make a recommendation for your clients. And if you're a global agency, often using global kit, whether it's you know for data platforms or for just general buying arrangements, it might influence the overall decision and the effectiveness of your advertising. And that's not something that's necessarily the fault of the local market, but it's sort of intrinsic in the structure of the global networks.
I mean, I think I was going to say, Duncan, that this is not a New Zealand problem either. It's happening all over the world. You can look to see what's happening in the UK at the moment with the Telegraph up for sale, you know, and it coming out that, you know, it's the company that had it previously has sort of bankrolled them for £120 million of losses over the last few years. But they're still, you know, it still will be sold for a significant amount of money because of the influence that a newspaper like that or The Sun or the Daily Mail has on the day-to-day life of British people. And I think the same thing is here is, you know, we know that whether you're the 6 o'clock news or you're the New Zealand Herald or the Dominion Post or the Spinoff, there's a really important role to have that. And similarly, but, you know, it's the fact of the matter is that as a media agency and consumers are now on, you know, using Meta, using TikTok. They have, as Richard said, they are really good platforms. You know, and you know, we deal with the New Zealand businesses who, you know, I'm sure the guys at Meta and Snap and TikTok, they are, you know, consumers of the Herald, Spinoff, etc. But globally, that's, you know, that we've created this in many many respects.
Because I guess the thing that I'm getting at here is that there is something in the sort of complexity and scale of these platforms that and in the relationship between the global holding companies that seems to be exerting an influence that, you know, certainly from local publishers' perspective, this idea that 90 cents in the dollar goes to the platforms, does that represent the fact that they have 90 cents, you know, like 90% of attention in digital spaces? Well, potentially it does, or is it that they just have the efficiency to back it up? But fundamentally, that what we're seeing, like, what was the the level of true crisis that is out there in local publishing right now is just kind of can't be overstated. We've seen it so viscerally. And, you know, honestly, kind of hearing what you're saying, it almost sounds like you're defending the way that things operate because, you know, Google and Meta's products are so good, which tends to lend itself to not a fatalism, but a level of, it's hard to see how this doesn't just keep happening unless there is an acknowledgement that that people who are directing that spend can play a role in trying to change the way that's operating, because Facebook and Google are not going to go anywhere. If the ratio changed to 85 cents in the dollar, the products stay the same. But the impact on the local market is profound. Do you find clients think that way, that they think about their role, or is it just a pure efficiency game and they're sanguine about the idea that that these platforms might die away and any kind of SWOT analysis of their business might mean, well, you know, if there's no local competition, well, so be it, that's not our role.
And we talk about this a lot, to be fair, and we can only really, you know, talk about what we think is D3. But we enter into dialogues and communication with every single media owner, less so the global platforms, because, you know, it's difficult to talk to an AI. But, you know, we do communicate with all of them, where we sit down and we talk about our clients' needs. We talk about what we could be doing together. You know, a big part of what we do at D3 is building partnerships with these media owners. So it's definitely not a fatalist view of the world. It's definitely, I think we can defend the fact that, you know, if you are a person, you know, a business selling widgets, and if you spend $1 million with a local media owner versus $1 million with Facebook or Google, if your return on investment is significantly higher with those, then it's our job as media professionals to suggest that that's where they should be spending their money. But I think most of our clients, and Richard can probably talk more about this, are, we do talk to them a lot about, how much spend we should be putting into local media, how we can be supporting. They love doing partnerships. They want to feel like, that they are, back in the community. Rich can definitely talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, there are two very sort of separate conversations here. The first one being that local media and premium local media tends to work harder. So that is for every person that you talk to in your channel, whether it's a TVNZ, a spin-off, an NZME, whatever it might be. The clarity is that local activity provides a premium environment for advertisers to stand out versus the clutter that you see on those global networks. So you have clear air in local media. The issue is using local media in a way that is impactful and engaging for consumers and therefore works hard in advertising. And the way that we choose to do that a lot is via integration, content partnerships, and much deeper relationships. So larger investments, obviously, but for smaller audience pools. Now, where the global guys are really good is reaching a lot of people really efficiently. And so they play a slightly different role. But to influence, local media continues to play a really, really important part. And actually, the shrinking ecosystem of local media is a real challenge for advertisers, because what you can always get is an audience. What you can't always get is impact. And so that's where we're really trying to work hard with local publishers to invest in creating more interesting and engaging ways to talk to people. The second conversation is, and the challenging conversation is around we are investing with the global players, but a lot of that content isn't necessarily originated by those global players, and it's often originated by local content providers. So that is a systemic problem that we need to address as a market and globally. And I think, you know, the biggest challenge we've all faced is how slow governments have been on moving into this space and actually providing platforms for local publishers around the world to actually receive fair compensation for the content that they're generating. So yes, the money does get bought via one of the global guys, but actually the content our users are looking at is often originated locally and in market. And so rebalancing that equation is super important for the survival of all press and local publishers around the world. And we continue to then do the right thing for our clients by engaging with local media for influence and engaging with the global players for outcomes.
I think that's an interesting kind of way of sort of, you know, expressing that they're, you know, the sort of functions in a way of the two bundles. The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
One thing, I mean, I don't want to kind of suggest for a minute that local media is, I mean, blameless is probably not the right word, but certainly that it's made every great decision. This is purely a problem of clients or media agencies or unrestrained social media. And I think one thing that, you know, when we were up in Austin, Richard, you know, you talked about the fact that you've been before D3, you used to run CAPEX, which was, well, I mean, maybe you could define it, because I think it's that's as a path not taken that, you know, had a potential to offer a true scale alternative that might have allowed the whole of local media potentially to kind of compete on more of an even footing with the social and search giants. That seems like something that's worth kind of contemplating in a way.
Yeah. I'll take you back to a little bit around the structure of CAPEX, which will then explain the reframing of the competitive set that we were trying to do. So CAPEX was owned by the four largest media owners at the time in New Zealand. So it was NZME, Fairfax, who are now Stuff, MediaWorks, who have now, you know, obviously were also including the TV assets of MediaWorks at the time, and TVNZ, and they're equally owned by those parties, to create what was a scale digital proposition. So pooling all of the audiences into a single place and allowing advertisers to target New Zealand inventory on their sites on a single platform, which clearly then the engine, which was CAPEX behind it, was much more efficient than everyone replicating it themselves. And the whole point of that was to try and just reframe the competitive set for local media from centuries of competing with each other to actually saying, look, there's a bigger play here, and actually collaboration is more important locally than competition. So we created that. We had great momentum behind it. I believe it was a model that could have been replicated rather than having to merge all these businesses together that we've seen a lot of attempts to do. We could have seen a model that was around collaboration. So you take CAPEX as the example of the monetization of inventory in a single pool. We could have had a single login for New Zealand inventory so that actually your targeting could have been equivalent to or better than some of the global players. You could have moved that into the production space where actually we shared newsrooms, shared resources across the board around the rental of anything from satellites through to other technology plays. Would have actually, I think, extended the runway for a lot of the conversations we're having at the moment for me with media owners to just drive that efficiency that we don't see in New Zealand. versus other markets?
We've just got such a fragmented market. I was writing a piece today reflecting on those two big Commerce Commission media merger decisions of 2017, which I personally think they got wrong on both counts, just because of this, you know, they just didn't seem to clock the speed that that change was coming. But you know, back then we had 10 sort of reasonably large media companies, which in a market this size seems kind of mad. And CAPEX, as a sort of solve for that, you know, if it could have been allowed to expand to find room for large and small players, and therefore equitably distributing a bigger pool of money. You made reference when we were in Austin to Australia, which a lot of media spend actually originates there, and there's just very little chance that it ever makes it down, you know, to a player like us. You know, it might even miss, you know, a Stuff or a MediaWorks, for example. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, there are two things around that market dynamic. The first being the our market is different than Australia in terms of the scale of the market. We don't see the same level of economies of scale that they have, and therefore that's why we are accelerated versus other markets in terms of the likes of News Hub. As we've seen in the last few weeks. So there's definitely a market challenge that we're seeing in New Zealand, which could have been addressed. And I think the Commerce Commission, probably the most disappointing thing about the outcome from the Commerce Commission decisions was the way that New Zealand media reacted. And we went back to a competitive mindset against each other rather than a collaborative mindset of how do we actually work together, not necessarily merging, but to be more efficient in the way that we go to market.
And I think that's the whole conversation is that, you know, media owners come to us, you know, the likes of NZME or whoever it might be, and ask to collaborate, build partnerships. But what we want them to do is to collaborate more to be able to make, you know, to come together as a New Zealand sort of media world. So that's a terrible way. But we think that we know, and especially your conversation about Australia, is that we have some quite close relationships with agencies in Australia, and they find it really difficult to understand the New Zealand landscape. And trying to buy media into New Zealand is significantly hard. So they end up, you know, putting money on YouTube or Meta simply because, you know, they don't know who to speak to at Stuff, or they don't know that Dominion Post is only in Wellington, or the New Zealand Herald actually isn't a national newspaper, which most of them think it is, and is only really distributed in Auckland. So I think what we could, and what we've seen, is that we need the New Zealand media owners to stop thinking themselves as each other's competition, but actually try and collaborate with each other to work harder for us, and then in turn our clients, because I think that together they're stronger. And actually this morning I was at a talk at Eden Park with the five CEOs of Super Rugby for New Zealand, which was actually hosted or moderated by Laura Maxwell from Stuff. And they said, like, you know, a couple of years ago, a little bit too late, but a couple of years ago they realized that, you know, 80% of what they were doing outside of the rugby pitch was identical. And they knew that the future of their sport required them to work collaboratively and to start looking at what are our economies of scale, how can we work together, you know, on pitch, and, you know, and transferring talent and stuff, still open world. But And I think that the media companies in New Zealand need to start thinking about it together, because again, I'm sure, you know, the New Zealand Herald will not be as successful as it is without the Dominion Post, and vice versa. So I think it's a really interesting challenge for them to start looking at.
I mean, that's a great point you raise, and you know, and obviously, we didn't get to the end of CAPEX, but it was through one of the partners essentially pulling out of it, right? And if you look at the sort of history of olive branches or attempts to collaborate, whether it's Freeview or very recently News Hub going to TVNZ and saying, is there a way that we can pull resources, and being, you know, if they had an emergency board meeting, decide the answer was no, even though they were also planning on making their own staff redundant. So it does feel like that sentiment is easy to express and gets hard in the execution, I suppose. Do you have any hope, or like, I mean, we haven't really talked about the how the kind of what the media agency's view of these kind of big shock events, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery kind of massively shrinking its local footprint, TVNZ chopping off two of its most sort of iconic shows. You know, how has that been received, and do you think, do you sense a level of opportunity at the back of it for a more kind of collaborative or thawed environment?
I think there's definitely, well, the first thing is it's incredibly sad. You know, there are people behind these roles and families, so we have to be incredibly sensitive around it. But I think it does create some opportunity, and actually it gives everybody a bit of a wake-up call to where we are in the marketplace. I see there's lots of opportunity to still collaborate. There's still massive demand for New Zealand-based content. We see all over the place, whether it's TV or print or digital, that the most consumed content is often New Zealand originated. So we just need to find a model that we can do that cost efficiently to bring it to market. We know when we advertise around locally originated content for our advertisers, it performs better than global content. So there are many, many really great opportunities out there. But I do think we need to go back to that point of reframing our competitive set, being realistic about the runway we've got to solve this, and actually running really, really hard as an industry to solve for it. There is still time, but we have to actually collaborate rather than treat each other as competition, and certainly not, which we have seen in some areas, individual media owners delighting in the challenges of their former competition as they shut newsrooms or see negative financial performance. I think we need to be talking each other up and supporting each other rather than necessarily delighting in each other's demise, because otherwise we'll all go that way.
This is sort of slightly switching topic, but and again, this is one of the things that you all have a vision into that the sort of layperson might not. And I wonder if you could try and explain it, as potentially you, Alex, because I know that you've had this very long, you've watched the evolution of the sort of digital advertising business for, you know, a quarter century. Like, so almost basically it's very...
You're just saying I'm old, isn't
it? I'm saying that you've seen the whole thing from the very beginning. I'm saying nothing of the sort. But I do think, you know, for example, Google's ad tech business, the number of products that are stacked on top of one another, which collectively can mean that an ad which might be served on a publisher's platform has actually been through a few different exchanges that mean that what ultimately nets out to the publisher is quite different from what the client is paying on the other side. Can you sort of explain how that works, and whether you think that there is a true competitive market, or whether that's a fair slice of the pie potentially? I'm conscious that these people are also your partners. So, you know.
Look, I think in the technology space there is very little competition. Google, unashamedly, and it's been their strategy, and the world has let it happen, is that they run the largest video platform in the world. They own the single biggest analytics platform in the world with Google Analytics. They run pretty much most of the advertising technology through what was called their DoubleClick stack, now called Google Marketing Platform. And they also have lots of other different technology, obviously search, and they have, they're starting to bring in more AI-based platforms like Performance Max, which is a very closed box of, you know, here's some money, go and do what you need to do, and I want, and, you know, we can just see our outcome. And it's a super efficient, but it is, you know, if you put your cynical hat on, it is, you know, the wolf looking after the chickens, marking his own homework. So there's a lot of trust. You know, there's a significant amount of money being spent every month on Google platforms in New Zealand, and, you know, we're tiny compared to the rest of the world. But there is very little room for competition in that ad tech space. And even, you know, with Richard with Capex, and yeah, they used Google Tech and found it really challenging because, you know, when your competition is running the technology that's running their single biggest competitor, there's the opportunity to, you know, play some games, which they did.
Have you seen, you know, whether it's a jurisdiction or a sort of proposal, anything that is out there in the world or in the local context, imagine, that sort of starts to kind of rebalance that enormous power imbalance? You know, obviously we have the digital news bargaining bill, which is currently before select committee. But there's a, you know, the EU's got a lot there, that, you know, there's various kind of lawsuits and proposals in front of the US, Canada's doing something. Is there anything that, you know, you've seen anywhere where you go, actually, that could make a real difference?
No, I'll be honest. I think that the only thing that would really make a difference is by breaking Google up, which I think is very unlikely to happen. But if they were to sort of break up the demand side, the supply side, and potentially platforms, but they are, you know, they are of pretty much omnipresent. You know, there are cars now which have Google baked into the operating system. You've got, you know, talk today of Google, you know, Google AI running Siri, which is then Google and Apple basically taking over the world. So I think that the reality is that, you know, on the flip side, because it's very easy to get, you know, to make this sound all negative, but, you know, everybody uses and loves Google's products, you know, YouTube, Google Maps. You know, we couldn't live our lives without Google Search. But in the background, there are concerns around how they do operate. And it is, you know, it is all happening in America largely. You know, the Google team here are, you know, 95% salespeople. There's a few engineers, I believe, but largely they're just, you know, paying the machine.
It's funny. I mean, like, it's actually incredibly refreshing to hear it expressed that way, because I feel like, well, A, you know it, and B, it can feel very opaque and hard to get your head around. So, but it's also quite, it can feel overwhelming and completely impossible. To sort of finish up, is there something, you know, often it takes a moment like the one that we're going through as a local industry right now to force a profound change or reevaluation from ideally multiple parts of the system. You know, this is obviously something that, say, in New Zealand On Air are thinking about very hard. You know, all of the parts of the system which, you know, haven't just announced massive and catastrophic losses or layoffs, so trying to imagine their thing. Is there anything that in this moment that sort of gives you hope that that out of the crisis might come an opportunity or something that could lead to a more stable and sustainable local industry?
I think New Zealand has a history, not just in the advertising world, but in all industry, of being incredibly creative. And that gives us a lot of hope. And I think there is still a huge amount of fantastic content being created here in this market, despite the challenges that we see. There is no doubt that there is increasing evidence of performance of New Zealand content for advertisers above and beyond that of global content. So I'm very confident that the market will find a new equilibrium, that local publishers will remain a central part of the advertising landscape and the media landscape. It'll just take a different form than it has done traditionally. Look, there's a reason that News Hub is likely to close, and that's because the audiences are living somewhere else. It doesn't necessarily mean people don't want or aren't interested in content that impacts their local community or the local marketplace. So the market has a habit of resetting. I just think we're in a place of a lot of turbulence at the moment. But there are lots of great media opportunities for advertisers who are willing to work that little bit harder to find them rather than necessarily just tick a box on the global platforms.
And I think that, as you said, I'm very old. I think Richard was as well. He's not quite as old as me, but we were both in London, and I was working for the Daily Express Group as my first job as a grad out of uni. And I genuinely remember the conversations that were being had, not with me, because I was way below that pay grade, but with people in the new media team who were like, let's just put everything online, you know, let's just put all of the news online. And no one really cared because, you know, that was a world of dial-up. But that decision nearly, you know, 20-odd years ago has had massive ramifications that, you know, we were just giving away something that would cost you 25p to read in the newspaper, but you could just, you know, get onto your modem and, you know, 25 minutes later you'd be able to read it. But that's the thing, is that these impacts, something so small, that decision such a long time ago, has now had such a massive impact on newspapers. And I think it's, my view is that it's a little bit like, you know, supermarkets, for example. And if you think of, you know, Google and Meta and stuff as the supermarkets of the media world, they came everywhere. Everyone was worried that, you know, the bakers and the butchers, etc., will all disappear. But the reality is some did, and the ones that weren't particularly profitable or weren't particularly good did disappear. But there's still a thriving market, and I think that's what will happen with local media. But I think the main thing is just persuading people with quality content, quality writing, that it's worth paying for. And I think it's going back to that thing of, yeah, sure, look, get your global news about, you know, if you're right wing, you'll get full right wing news on TikTok. If you're a communist, you'll get just communist news on TikTok. But if you actually want to educate yourself and actually understand what's going on, then pay for the news that you want, where you want to get it. And I think, and the same will happen with TV, radio, podcasts. So I think that's the work. We, as Rich said, we are right in the middle of a big shift. And where that shift ends, who knows? But I still feel really positive about it. And I think we do have some brilliant people in charge of our media publishers. You know, that Google and Facebook aren't going to change their strategies. We know what they're going to do. You know, no one at Google New Zealand, for example, has any input into this global strategic vision of Google. So we know that what they're going to be doing. So we just need to be able to, you know, be really confident about the quality of our product.
Look, it's been such a fascinating conversation. I feel like I'm very grateful for the level of kind of candor and insight that you brought to it, and genuinely did end on quite a positive note. So incredibly impressive impressive stuff given the atmosphere we're talking into. Alex, Richard, thanks you so much for coming up, and yeah, look forward to kind of hopefully seeing that potentially positive view play out.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And nice to see you outside of Austin.
Not as nice, but we'll take it.
Yeah, definitely.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.